your first steps to kind of assess where they are and what some of those gaps are?
First priority is making sure that brand is really profound and it's amplified and in a polished B2B way.
They haven't captured any data. They don't know what message they have because they really haven't branded. The other KPIs we would look at would be how much pipeline you're generating.
Why should we spend money on it?
It's very important to lean into the market with an impression that is a lasting impression. The market, the message, and the medium will be much more sticky, and it will drive revenue much faster.
Welcome to the Go, Go, Grow podcast, where we share practical advice and growth strategies with scaling B2B businesses. My name is Dasha Tischlich, and I'm the founder of StratCraft, where I work with founders and leaders to achieve their value and revenue objectives through strategic planning and operational excellence.
Hi, my name is Michelle Page. I'm founder of Sales Chasers, and I partner with clients to generate more revenue through sales, marketing, and customer success.
Welcome to another episode of Go, Go, Grow. Today we have with us in the studio, Mindy Anderson. She is a fractional chief marketing officer and founder of I Breathe Marketing. With over 20 years of brand and digital marketing leadership experience and with worldwide iconic brands, Mindy has a passion for working on big, challenging problems and finding creative solutions that reach people in authentic ways. Mindy is a visionary leader with proven excellence in driving customer-led growth across the funnel, from acquisition to activation, retention, and revenue, and is highly skilled in developing content strategies for fintech, investment management, SaaS, and professional services companies. We are so proud to also collaborate with her as a fellow member of the Acorn Oak community. Welcome, Mindy.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with my thought leadership women.
Well, we are very excited to have you join us. And of course, you've worked with clients just about every life stage cycle, whether it's startups to Fortune 500. I believe some are even Fortune 100. But the needs of startups and scale-ups, a lot of the people and companies that are part of our audience, those needs are quite different from major corporations that are, you know, hitting millions, maybe even billions of dollars in revenue. What are some of the common challenges or sales and marketing needs that you see in businesses that are at that stage of growth?
The challenges is usually because there's such a small budget for what mm-hmm. they want to accomplish, which is, of course, ginormous. But based on their stage of growth and based on the number of people in the shoes that are able to execute, it gets challenging, which means that maybe they don't have a sales enablement person. Maybe they don't have a CRM set up to take the questions from the prospects versus their customers mm-hmm. and putting that into their content strategy. They also will likely compare themselves to a brand that maybe they came from that was much larger, and then they started their own company. So they forget about the building blocks that it took for that company to achieve that brand marketing fit, to achieve that brand equity as well that's built up over time. So, you know, we have certain brands that we're all attached to, but no one thinks about the struggle and the amount of time that it took for that company to build that up as well. And a lot of these small companies, as well as startups, think that there's a faster track to achieve that success. And I don't know if there is. Sales and marketing should be in lockstep, of course, but the work involved it can take longer than many would like, because at the end of the day, we need to build trust. Each company mm-hmm. that wants to work with any given customer, no matter the industry, no matter the size of your company, you have to earn that trust, and it's not just going to be handed over to you.
Absolutely. Many of the companies that I work with, especially founders or men and women who have a great deal of expertise in the area that they founded their company in or went to market in, they're very experienced in that area, but they really don't know that much about sales and marketing. And that's why they talk to experts like the three of us. And they say, Michelle, what's the secret to success? What's that formula? Of course, there is not one. There's not, you know, one snap of the fingers and you're successful. So what I tell them is it's really a three-legged stool. So I'd love to get both of your input on this, but I tell them that there are really three legs of success for sales and marketing. It's what I call the three M's: market, message, and medium. So if you have all those that are spot on and you execute well, then you're going to have success. Have you found that to be true, Mindy and Dasha?
I do. I think even prior to market, message, and medium, some companies will overlook the fact that they need to kind of know if they have a product market fit. Mm-hmm. And I would even go beyond product market fit to say, you know, customer opportunity within the market. So a lot of companies are repeating what other companies are doing. So what I see as an opportunity is these small companies have many opportunities, you know, in today's market. So why aren't they seizing the opportunity that's kind of sitting on a shelf waiting for someone to go after it? And then the market, the message, and the medium will be much more sticky and it will drive revenue much faster because they're filling a void. So that's also kind of my mindset, you know, go where there's a need, not where you necessarily want.
That is such good advice. And of course, go there with the strategy. Dasha, that is an area that you definitely excel in. What do you think of that? How do sales and marketing work together as part of that strategy?
When early stages of the business, they're usually kind of doing a little bit of everything in a sort of a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Let's try this spaghetti at the wall approach. It's very reasonable because even if you have the product market fit, really knowing which channels people are using, what exactly they want to hear about the product, how they're going to be interacting with your company, what they're going to be reaching out with, what kind of problems about, how long the sales cycle is going to take, how that relationship, all of that information, you don't discover that in a day. And you will get clues to it in that early customer discovery process as you're starting your company. But if your company is producing revenue, you have a signal, but it's not a very strong signal because let's say you're at the stage of growth where you have a few customers, right? We're talking B2B companies. So maybe they have a handful of customers and they've kind of figured out like what's working for these customers. And maybe they have some idea that maybe there's more of this type of customer out there. But the strategic aspect of that is, are you asking a question that you're then targeting, testing, and finding data that feeds back to it that like confirms, or are you actually just spraying spaghetti at walls and then turning around and not even knowing what's stuck to the wall, right? So to know what worked, you have to be starting out with a strategy. You have to start out with a hypothesis, kind of like a scientist starts out when they do their research, right? It's sales and marketing is, there's a discovery process to it. It's, you know, it's not, sales is not the hammering or marketing, hammering of information that results in a buying of a product. It's, are you fitting the right things to the right people, discovering them at the places and at times when they're going to be engaged and working with them to provide it to them. So that strategy, you have to know what's your goals, what are you actually going to do and not do, which is very important in strategy. The things you're not doing, just as important as the things you're doing in strategy. And then measuring it, in tracking it, so that you can learn from it to figure out what is and isn't working. Otherwise, you're just going to continue doing more activity, but not necessarily resulting in growth that's scalable and that increases, you know, per effort. You could be doing more effort than growth.
So there really is both an art and a science to sales and marketing. And one of the reasons that we love working with Mindy, and she and I find a lot of complementary synergy when we have projects where we kind of utilize each other's knowledge. We both work in sales and marketing and have that expertise. Mindy's depth is more on the marketing side. My depth is more on the sales side. So I'm going to ask you, Dasha, as a more objective party, a lot of people don't know the difference between sales and marketing. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, we can get into a lot of complexity and nuance, but I think a few things can just help keep it straight. Let's first talk about the areas of focus. So sales focuses one-to-one. It's like hand-to-hand combat. It's usually a lot of one individual sales representative talking to the prospect or the customer or emailing one of them one-on-one or reaching out on LinkedIn. It's like, you have my full attention is the sales experience. The marketing focus is more like public speaking. It's one to many. Usually you're communicating, whatever the method, to multiple people. Anybody come by and see this. It's public information. Sales focus, sales is usually held responsible directly at the end of the revenue cycle. So for closing that lead into a sale. But marketing's responsibility also spreads out to general awareness. Are people aware? Do they feel good about what you're doing? Are they, you know, are you having them interact with you regularly? Sales tends to focus on the relationship. And marketing, of course, also has a relationship aspect, but also focuses on the reputation of the business. And for sales, just in terms of like company stage, it's consistent. You can't set up anything in sales and just have it keep going. It requires a person individually following up with that one-on-one way in an ongoing way. And the way a sales team scales, of course, there's tools and technologies, but it's also people. Marketing is kind of different. There's a lot of upfront heavy lifting. There's a lot of systems and automations that are possible. And so even though the messaging and new content creation is the ongoing piece, there's a lot of heavy lifting upfront that has long-term payoff, almost like you're building something. You could say, you know, when you're building a website, you're like building digital real estate. There's a lot of evergreen capability in marketing. So I think sales methods people are pretty familiar with. There's a lot of outbound calling, people call it cold calling, cold emailing, reaching out to people, and then going to the trade shows, shaking hands, talking to people one-on-one, networking and developing partnerships and things like that. So, and then of course, all the work of closing the deal, of following it through until something is signed. But marketing, I think, Mindy, I want to hand it off to you in terms of what, you know, the kind of broad scope of methods for marketing is, especially for B2B businesses that are scaling up.
So the first and foremost is your brand and your brand marketing. So what does that brand look and feel like to another person, right? So that's like the heartbeat of your company. If you don't have a strong brand and it doesn't resonate with your audience, then your brand has not defined its brand why, and it's not resonating in the marketplace. So there'll be work to be done on that front. Then there's digital marketing, which is usually your, you know, most importantly, your website, which is really when people go to your website, do they understand the value that your company is bringing to them or can bring to them as a possibility? And are they engaged with the content on it? And then you have social media marketing, which is usually that dedicated channel where businesses go, typically LinkedIn, and they want to see what your business is doing. What sort of content strategy is resonating to them? Like, are you talking about timely thought leadership, case studies, white papers, maybe case lists? You know, even if you have a carousel, there's lots of different ways to represent what you do, you know, with the value that you're doing as a company. But it's really up to, hopefully you have a good, strong social media person that can also represent the different value aspects that your company is bringing to the table.
So one question that I think is in many people's thoughts is as they start to think, like we're talking about companies that probably don't have both a marketing and a sales leader and full teams. They probably have somebody here, a little bit here, activities. What are the things that are like when you're coming in, and Mindy, let's start with you and then go to Michelle. When you're coming in, you most often see is like these things are very commonly completely missed in terms of marketing that are just so valuable and so helpful to have started earlier rather than later?
Most of the CEOs don't have a feedback loop with their prospects and with their clients. And that should, in my mind, inform their content strategy. So if you hear the same feedback from three prospects, for example, and the same feedback from three clients, that informs your content strategy. So you do two things. You're now a thought leader on the very questions your audience is asking and concerned about. And then you solve it by creating a piece of thought leadership, case studies and the like, emails, or whatever sort of communication you want to get out to your target audience. And now your content strategy and social media. So it kind of like they have different legs, right? Like it's like the octopus goes in different directions. So you can repurpose that content for a host of things. And it should never just be one and done for marketing. It should always be what medium does your end user like to consume? And then serve it up.
Absolutely.
How about Michelle for sales? What's kind of the common pieces that are missing that you think this is an area that, you know, must be invested in as early as you can start investing in it?
I think the biggest challenge is, especially when you have a startup that they have a few customers, and I see this especially in technology with SaaS clients. They have a customer base. It may be a small customer base, but they want to scale. They want to hire their first sales executive because they've been founder-led sales. And they think, okay, well, I've been selling. I'll just hire someone and they'll be able to sell. But they don't have a sales system. They don't have a CRM. They haven't captured any data. They don't know what message they have because they really haven't branded. So you kind of see here, they don't have a sales system. They don't have a marketing foundation. They don't realize that there is a handshake there between sales and marketing. And it's not that you need one or the other. You need both. And you probably, as that founder and trying to scale your business, if you don't have either, you probably can't afford both. So you have to find a way to fill both functions in order to be successful in either.
This handshake piece, I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit at the strategy piece, but there's also this like technological piece to it. There's also new methods that are emerging that are very much in between sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. Just other thoughts on how do you make that handshake work? What do you focus on to make sure that that's functioning well and can scale?
Well, I'm gonna definitely ask Mindy to chime in on this, but I really think it starts at the executive level. Whether it's a founder, whether it's the entire C-suite, but you have to have a strategy. You need to know what your end goal is. You need to know where you want to go. You have to assess where you are today and then figure out how are we going to get there. The next step is, where is your current data? If it's on a napkin, it's not good enough. You've got to have it in a CRM. I don't know any executive out there, whether it's the three of us or any other leader, that says you don't need a CRM, a tracking system, a central source of truth. So get your data in order. At that point, you need to figure out what are you trying to say? Who is your market? So whether you find a marketing person that knows sales or a salesperson that knows marketing, you've got to have both identified. At that point, you can add on to your team. But it all starts with the executives. You've got to put that strategy out there, and then you've got to execute throughout the organization what your message is, who your market is, and when you identify that, then you can look at sales and marketing, figure out what your mediums are going to be. And yes, I said mediums. You can't have just one.
Mindy, how about from your perspective for that handshake and also overlap areas where like you have to get it right?
marketing really should also support sales with overcoming objections, right? So a lot of salespeople might need talking points. And so, you know, I have always kind of found myself with doing marketing and sales enablement. So it's, which is not the same as, you know, delivering the sales delivery to the person, to the prospect or a client. So I need them to kind of make sure that they're able to squelch those concerns that maybe that prospect has. So they kind of see that through. But if I can help them close the deal by saying, you know, these are standard objections that we keep hearing from prospects, and so here's how to overcome them, I think that would be a huge asset. And then you team better together as well, because they know that you're in it together, kind of thing. And you have one part of the cycle and they have the other, and there's no overlap. So I think there's ways to create that synergy. The other synergy that I've created with sales teams is creating approved marketing posts. Some of these industries I've worked in are highly regulated. So you can't just spray and pray with your social media marketing. You have to make sure that you use certain language and you phrase things in certain ways that are compliant. And so if you're not compliant, then that company will get a fine and they can't afford that. So I'm very careful with the marketing that I've done because I come from financial services and it's highly regulated. So when you give them approved messages and you're just like, go ahead and post away, then they're like, oh, great. I don't have to do anything. I just have to click post. And then they're amplifying the company. So they're still branding the company and so they're doing their part to ensure that brand presence is out there on different feeds, right? So it helps the company overall because they have a different feed than what you have, right? There's lots of different tricks, I think, for sales and marketing, but I think overall they should have maybe even like a monthly call too and talk about, you know, here's what I'd love to see from sales or here's what I'd love to see from marketing. Have that open dialogue and hear each other out so that you can kind of win together. If they look at the company as two islands, then you're going to have that internal friction. Mm-hmm. So I think a part of my mentality is, you know, we're in it to win it. So let's do it together and let's figure out how to chart this course together.
So Mindy, when you start talking to a client or take on a challenge, because I know you love those big challenges, what are your first steps to kind of assess where they are and what some of those gaps are? Some of the obstacles they have from a sales and marketing perspective that is standing in the way of their growth?
It's one, you know, what staff do they have in place? What, you know, is the website even polished looking? Does it explain to me in 60 seconds or less, like what they do, or am I confused, or do I feel like they're missing the mark, or the imagery is unprofessional, or it looks like it was from 30 years ago and it's just not modern. So there's, you know, and with technology today, you can use Unsplash and for getting really nice images. And so to me, there's not necessarily an excuse for companies having a poor website or a poor social media, because there's ways to fake it while you make it. Yeah. So it's kind of like assessing what's there and then digging further, like what sort of marketing operations is in place. As you guys mentioned, the CRM is super critical to kind of get to the later level of getting into personalization and segmentation. But that will be down the road. The first priority is making sure that brand is really profound and it's amplified in a polished B2B way, because B2B is very much about illustrating professionalism, and it's very important to lean into the market with an impression that is a lasting impression. You don't want to look sloppy out of the gate, or you don't want to look like you're modern and lost in 1960 when you got to move to 2024. So there's different things that I look for, you know, and then I also hear from the CEO, you know, are you out there putting your own CEO's narrative on the market, you know, and personal branding is now kind of, it's a dovetail with that corporate branding where people want to hear the person behind the company too. So It always helps if the CEO likes to do public speaking.
Yeah. As a question, because I've seen this in my client work, you know, sometimes companies are like, well, marketing, you know, they'll say either this, they'll say, well, marketing's never brought us like anything that we were close. Like we never got a lead off the website that resulted in a close. Like, why should we spend money on it? Or just as an opposite, I worked at companies in this industry and their websites were great and we spend millions of dollars, but they didn't result in any leads being generated from the website or any deals. Like, what do you say to that? Because it's a legitimate question that I get all the time. And I know the answer to it, but trying to bring a person through it is always very challenging. Because they're basically just
data trackers, right? Like, what sort of data trackers do you have? Do you have a Power BI? Do you have Tableau? Do you have anything that's even giving clear data? So it's easy for someone to say, my competitor is doing it better. What data do you have about their website that's telling you that is the truth? It's the same thing about, you know, if you don't have any lead trackers on your website, you don't know if you have good leads or bad leads on your website. Just because you get website traffic from Google Analytics and you can see that traffic doesn't mean it's good traffic. So do you have the right traffic coming to your website or is it all wrong? If it's all wrong, then your message is not the right market fit. So that means you have to go back to the drawing board. So there's a lot of questions that I have as far as is the CEO and the C-suite in general asking the right questions, or are they just comparing themselves to their buddies, you know?
So what type of performance metrics would you look at or would you establish with a new client?
I would want to know how long does it take to have a true MQL based on the marketing effort. So we talked about the three primary.
Define for us, if you would, an MQL, because some of our audience may not know.
Yes, marketing qualified lead, meaning the marketing qualified lead is the ideal customer that we would like to bring into the company to buy our product or service, right? So if we're doing organic social media posts, if we have a really good website with a lot of blogs that are filled with actionable steps of what a company can do when they have X problem and they sign up for that newsletter and they keep coming back for more and your open rates are like 30 to 50% and you keep getting more and more engagement and people are signing up on your newsletter on LinkedIn. There's little things that you can do that are not expensive for companies that are in the beginning stages to grow that traction. So what is that traction looking like? Like, did you gain more newsletters or are people opting out? If people are opting out, that means, you know, there's something not working right. But if you have higher and higher open rates, it means that you're getting better at maybe your A/B testing with subject lines. You're getting better at getting people to sign up. And then maybe your outreach is doing a nice job of kind of just getting to the point and being personable, but you're also not trying to sell them something. You just want to add value mm-hmm. to their life and saying, you know, I have this case study. I don't know if you would find this helpful. If you want to read it over and let me know what you think about it. I think just kind of asking people for their opinion is always a nice way to bring in prospects that are organically coming in. And if people don't, a lot of the sales people, I find, no offense, Michelle, they want to kind of get to the pitch.
No. That's not the way I do it.
Okay. Well, that's good because you got to build a relationship first.
No, I frown upon pitches. That is not part of my vocabulary. I endorse having business conversations.
That's mm-hmm. good. And that's the thing is, like, you know, the circle of trust is alive and well in business to business, you know, so the circle of trust and building on that trust is truly the key to success. If companies want to know how do I succeed, that's it. You got to build that trust and there's no fast tracking that trust. It's, you know, it's the same thing. You don't take a gal on a date and then say, will you marry me? You gotta build up to that.
Absolutely.
Michelle, can I turn the tables real quick? Because we dug in a little bit on the marketing side primarily with the focus, but I'm just, you know, some of the things are probably similar in terms of how you would audit and the performance metrics you set up, but some might be different. So just a quick overview on sales side, like what what you might look for that might be different from what Mindy described, or in addition to what Mindy described, what you need to look at to also assess the sales side?
Well, a lot of what we would look at would be not so much productivity based, but conversion based. So based on, let's say, for example, outbound calling, because that's what a lot of people think about when they're talking about B2B for lead generation. If you're integrating marketing and outbound calling, it may be how many MQLs do we convert to an SQL, which would be a sales qualified lead. So a marketing qualified lead, as Mindy mentioned, is the prospect meets your ideal customer profile, and perhaps they've raised their hand and said, okay, I'm the right kind of person. I'll sign up for your newsletter. A sales qualified lead would be, okay, I'm ready to talk to a sales rep. So if you graduate them from MQL to SQL, that's a very positive metric. If you have a conversation with someone and they're not ready to buy now, maybe they're not ready to go to an SQL now, but they have long-term interest and you convert them to a nurture, that's something that we would look at. If of all of your conversations, your conversation average length is 30 seconds versus a 5-minute conversation, and it's a meaty conversation, you uncover a lot of information, you get referred from a director level up to a VP, then that's a successful call. If you're not getting information, acquiring additional knowledge about your prospects, or if everybody that you call is a wrong number, the list that you have, they're either out of business, or that prospect is no longer there, or heaven forbid, it's a competitor, well, then you've got a bad list. So you need to look at the accuracy of that data. The other KPIs we would look at would be how much pipeline you're generating. Because if you're calling a lot, or combining that with email outreach, that social media outreach where you're connecting with your ideal prospect on their social media channels, but you're not getting them into the actual sales funnel, or if you're getting them into the funnel and they're just languishing there, you're not moving them forward in the funnel, then that's probably how you're executing that sales and marketing message. So all of that you look at from the sales side, is it the message or maybe the messenger? So is it the sales rep itself that needs to be perhaps coached and you know, kind of refine that message? So a lot of the sales metrics and KPIs could indicate an issue with a qualitative or a quantitative challenge.
So one area, just kind of thinking about what you both said in terms of the metrics and the performance from the handshake. So going back to our question around what the handshake is and how it should look like in terms of when you're trying to prioritize resources. One of the things that is oftentimes missing is the tying of the metrics together. A lot of companies don't even have metrics at the point where they're starting to scale up. They don't really measure. They hardly even look at the data that exists, even if it's not, like, let's say, metricized. So from a strategy planning perspective, there's like raw data. It's all over the place. And then there's like, where does that data belong in the pipeline? What goals does this data inform us about? How does this data come together to inform us about questions, right? So that's kind of the metrics cascade. And, you know, at this stage of growth, a lot of companies don't have that at all. And this is one of the things that they need to be establishing. But on the flip side of it, so we talked a little bit about their strategy and how that cascades down to sales and marketing. But I think, Mindy, you might have mentioned this earlier. There's also the other piece of it, which is sales and marketing are collecting a lot of information about the customer, the market, where things are going, what people want in terms of features, what people are complaining about, what additional needs they have. And these are all really good clues to potential new service offerings, expansion, acquisition, new partnerships, different features that need to be added to the product if you're selling that. But if sales and marketing are doing that separately, you're seeing like, it's like the analogy of the elephant and blind people like touching different parts of the elephant and trying to kind of reconstruct the elephant from the trunk and the foot. You know, if sales is looking at it and you've got some data that's like granular from each individual customer, and marketing's looking at it and they've got like bigger picture data, like aggregated data, activity data, that doesn't necessarily come down to like a clear recommendation for future areas of growth of the company, but a really good functioning sales and marketing team that are working together, they can produce a vision that they can bring to the CEO and say, here are the things that we can tell you, not only that we're serving, but there's these opportunities. Our customers also need this. They're also asking for this. This area is growing. If we provide this, we can be unique in this particular way. It aligns with what we're already doing. And that's possible to come from the sales and marketing executives, which, you know, for the people who are listening to the show who are sales and marketing executive, this is a call to collaboration, because how much more useful you can be if you can bring those recommendations for growth, not just the growing of your department and your activities, but also additional strategic ideas that influence the rest of the company's direction.
So that's a perfect point to kind of capstone our conversation. And of course, this episode is entitled, Which Comes First, Sales or Marketing? And I think we can all agree they pretty much come at the same time. So if you think about the recycling triangle, the way it works, marketing puts out the marketing message, sales delivers it to the prospect, gets feedback, takes that feedback back to marketing. Marketing refines it, takes it back to sales, and so the process continues. So I don't think one can come before the other. I think they both come at the same time, and they work in sync with that handshake.
I love that visual.
We want to thank you so much for joining us today. I do want to share with the audience, Mindy writes some fantastic blogs, and one that we are going to include in our show notes today is one entitled Marketing and Sales in Modern Times. That is located on her website, which is I Breathe Marketing. We'll include the link on our show notes.
Thank you so much for having me. This was an amazing, spirited conversation, which is always a lot of fun. You know, I could talk about marketing and sales with you guys anytime. So I'd love to come back one time if you'll have me.
Absolutely.
But thank you again for having me today. I really enjoyed myself.
Mindy, thank you so much. And we're definitely going to have you back on, because there's so much, we kind of did a general overview, but there's so much depth that we can go into and educate our listeners about so many exciting new trends in marketing, new tools in marketing. So we're going to have you back on for that in-depth conversation. Now, just a quick reminder, Go, Go, Grow is available across all major podcast platforms and on YouTube. We are going to be talking about office hours on our social media. This is a free resource for our listeners. You can join Michelle and I, come with your questions, and we can problem solve them together in a round table with other CEOs and executives.
And if you did find something of value today, I'm quite certain you probably did, please share Go, Go, Grow with a colleague or a friend so that they can gain value as well. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.